Lamentations 3:19 through 33. I remember my affliction and my wandering, the bitterness and the gall. I will remember then, and my soul is downcast within me. Yet this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope. Because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed, for his compassions never fail. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. I say to myself, the Lord is my portion, therefore I will wait for him. The Lord is good to those whose hope is in him. To the one who seeks him, it is good to wait patiently for the salvation of the Lord. It is good for a man to bear the yoke while he is young. Let him sit alone in silence, for the Lord has laid it on him. Let him bury his face in the dust. There may yet be hope. Let him offer his cheek to the one who will strike him. Let him be filled with disgrace, for no one is cast off by the Lord forever. Though he brings grief, he will show compassion. So great is his unfailing love, for he does not willingly bring affliction or grief to anyone. The word of God for the people of God.
All right. Good morning, everyone. It's good to see you today. So we've been talking about Lamentations. We've gone through what is a lament, and Kelly went through that, or my dad went through that pretty quickly. So I just want to remind you, there's four main parts to a lament. It's prayer. We turn to God, right? We're not just like doing our own thing, kind of it's inward, but a lament first turns to God, then it gives a complaint, right? Something is wrong, something that I have experienced or something I see in the world is wrong, and then we boldly ask God to make it right. We boldly ask for justice to be done, and then we trust in him and in his promises. So as we get to Lamentations chapter 3, we have already gone through the first two chapters. Chapter 3 starts right in the middle of that complaint. I'm just going to read for you Lamentations 3, verses 10 through 18. This is Jeremiah talking about God. When it says this is Jeremiah talking about God. Like a bear lying in wait, like a lion in hiding, he dragged me from the path and mangled me and left me without help. He drew his bow and made me the target for his arrows. He pierced my heart with arrows from his quiver. I became the laughingstock of all my people. They mock me in song all day long. He has filled me with bitter herbs and given me gall to drink. He has broken my teeth with gravel. He has trampled me in the dust. I have been deprived of peace. I have forgotten what prosperity is. So I say, my splendor is gone and all that I had hoped from the Lord. So he's complaining pretty intensely and about God, saying, God, you have done all these terrible things to me. Has God done all these terrible things? Maybe not, but Jeremiah feels that way, right? And we could, if we go into the actual book itself, Israel had sinned against God. They had broken the covenant. And so there was some aspect of God allowing the Babylonians, they were the ones that destroyed Jerusalem and they captured the Israelites. So the Babylonians were the ones that actually had captured them, but God allowed it to happen because Israel had forsaken the covenant. God said, I will be with you, I will protect you, and we're going to be in this covenant relationship. And they broke the contract. So that's a little bit of the backstory of Lamentations. So Jeremiah is really upset about this, though. It's really clear how upset he is. But then in the middle of all this, in the middle of Jeremiah's lament, Jeremiah makes this really sharp turn from the complaining. And that's what Anya just read. I remember my affliction and my wandering, the bitterness and the gall. I will remember them, and my soul is downcast within me. Yet this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope. He just said, all my hope is gone. Right? He just said, all my hope is gone. And then just three verses later, he's saying, yet this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope. And just to read it again, this is what Jeremiah remembers. Because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed, for his compassions never fail. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. I say to myself, the Lord is my portion. Therefore I will wait for him. And I'm just trying to imagine, if I am say some enemy, I'm not going to specify who might be an enemy, but say some enemy of the U.S. Comes here to Portland, wipes out the city completely. You know, half of the people that you know could be dead, and you're carried off, and now you are like a slave in another country. And then saying, Lord, your mercies are new every morning. I'm just not sure that I would really feel that way. You know, it's not logical. It doesn't really make sense. I don't know if you've heard of cognitive dissonance before, but cognitive dissonance is where two things, like we believe two things. Jeremiah is saying, I believe, you know, I'm out of hope. This is terrible. God, you've treated me wrong. And then at the same time, he's saying, God, you are good to me. You love me. Your compassion never ends. And there's this cognitive dissonance because can those both be true at the same time? It really doesn't seem like they can be. They seem to logically contradict each other. So what changed? Why did Jeremiah change from this like really deep and painful complaint to this expression of trust? I'm just going to read that verses 19 through 21 again. I remember my affliction and my wandering, the bitterness and the gall. I well remember them, and my soul is downcast within me. Yet this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope. And I really like that NLT translates that verse as, yet I still dare to hope when I remember this. And I think that's something that a lot of us struggle with, right? Especially like in relationships with people, if somebody lets us down, we're like, I'm not trusting them again. You know, I'm not gonna give that part of myself away. Or maybe you took a risk. Maybe you, told a joke in front of your friends, and then they were kind of like, oh, that was a lame joke. I'm thinking of when you're like in middle school or something. And you told this joke, you're trying to find, you know, trying to be somebody, and then they all just kind of laugh at you, and not like laugh at the joke, but laugh at you for trying to tell the joke. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, I'm not funny, you know? And we're like, I'm never trusting anybody with that part of me again. I remember I had this experience in college, and it was really weird. I think back on it and I'm like, I don't know why this person said this to me, because they were my friend and I don't think they meant anything by it. But we were both on like the worship team at my church, or at the school, and I was just having some fun and I was scatting. I really like jazz, and so I was doing some scats, and this friend, she was like a really good singer, you know, and she was kind of like the singer at the school, and she was like, oof, never do that again. And I was like, oh, and like a part of me then was like, I can't ever trust anybody with that again, you know, because it's not going to be received well. And I had to like, I couldn't trust anybody with it. But now, as I've kind of come, and I think all of us can maybe think, or maybe if we can't bring them to mind, we've all experienced those things before, those things that we took a chance, we maybe shared, oh, I really love this TV show, or something that that was risky. Probably more serious ones too, like you shared with somebody, man, I have been depressed, or man, I've been having a lot of anxiety. And just when it's not received well, and you feel like you can't give that part of yourself, you can't dare to hope that that part is like acceptable, or that people would ever accept you for it. But Jeremiah, in this really intense situation, he dares to hope. And the really important word here is the yet, right? Yet this I call to mind, or yet I still dare to hope when I remember this. Yet is a conjunction. Do any of you remember Schoolhouse Rock? Conjunction, junction, what's your function? Yeah. Conjunctions, they combine words, phrases, or clauses, as the song sings. They provide a relationship between two different concepts. So yet, I looked it up, what other words we could maybe use to describe that, and yet can mean, but at the same time. Or, but nevertheless. So if we read that, yet I still dare to hope and I remember this with those words, but at the same time, I still dare to hope. Or, but nevertheless, I still dare to hope. So he's not saying that those feelings that he has, that feeling of being so hurt and feeling like, God, how could you do this to me? He's saying, even though I feel that way, I still dare to hope when I remember who God is. And the Hebrew language, when in this instance, when he's saying, I remember or I call to mind, it's actually like the very center, the heart of what he believes. You know, we have these sort of fundamental things that we believe. And he's saying, I reach down to the very depth of who I am, and I believe that God is good. And because of that, he's able to feel all the feelings that he has and see all of the injustice around him, but still have hope. He's not saying that either one is less real than the other. He's still recognizing the injustices and saying, yeah, these are unjust. This is painful. I am suffering. And at the same time, without diminishing that, he also believes that God is good at the very center of his heart. Hope doesn't come from a change in circumstances. And this, I think, is really fundamental. We have to ask ourselves, does our hope lie in God or in what we think he will do for us? I think of the testimony that my mom shared a couple of weeks ago about how she had this hope and this belief in what she thought God was going to do for her, or kind of this relationship. And when God didn't hold up his end of the bargain, she almost lost her faith completely in God. But that's because her hope wasn't necessarily in God himself, but in what she thought he was going to do for her. When we experience disappointment, a loss of some sort, or grief, is that really God failing us? Did God promise us that we wouldn't experience things like loss or grief? Of course not. There have been several times in my life when I've said to myself, man, I never thought I would be going through this, or I would be experiencing this. Right, we experience this disappointment. And I want to give you this is a really frivolous example, but I remember when I was 16, I was like, my birthday, I was going to try to get my license, right? I was going to go in and get tested. And then when I went to my mom and I was like, Mom, like, I want to go get my, you know, let's go get my license. She was like, oh, I forgot to set an appointment. And I was so disappointed that I would just cried and cried. I was so sad about it. So that's like a small example, right? But we have these things that we put our hope in and we're like, oh, this is going to happen. And I'm so looking forward to it. And then when it doesn't happen, we're disappointed. And in larger circumstances, I wouldn't say I really grieved over the fact that I couldn't get my license right on my 16th birthday. But when we experience more profound disappointments, we feel this grief and we often blame God for it. But ultimately, I face that disappointment because I put my hope in what I thought was going to happen. I mean, we'll still always like grieve and feel disappointment, even when our hope is in God, but we're not going to lose that sense of who God is or come to a point of despair if our hope is in God rather than in our circumstances. When things don't go as planned, does that mean that God isn't good or that he lied to me? We feel like that sometimes. Right? We feel that when things don't turn out the way that we thought they would in like big ways, maybe a divorce, the loss of a family member, abuse that happened in your life, you know, things that are really, really deep. Maybe that feels like God lied to you or that he hasn't been good to you because he let that happen. But when we think that way, really our hope was in that the circumstances or what we thought he was going to do for us. Because there are some things that God says he's going to do for us, and we're going to talk about those, but it's actually different than what we think it is. So Jeremiah, when he remembers God's character, there are four things that he thinks about. There's four things that he remembers. The first one is that God's mercy never ends, right? His mercies are new every morning. This is at the core of what Jeremiah believes about God. And he believes this for two reasons. The first is that he's personally seen the goodness of the Lord, and that he also knows God's reputation of faithfulness to his people. Right? The Jewish people, they even today, they celebrate the Passover, right? Which is related to when God brought the Israelites out of Egypt. And they remember that Passover because they want to tell the stories of how God is faithful. So Jeremiah knew of God's faithfulness in the stories that he had heard, in what he had read maybe, and then also because he had personally had a relationship with God. Jeremiah is certain of God's character and his covenant to his people, and we can be sure of his covenant to us. And we can make it through every day because of God's new mercies. I think about, and I was just talking to my mom about this the other day, when I first, and I think I shared this a couple weeks ago when I was sharing about, you know, grace is greater than our circumstances. When I found out on Christmas Day, when me and my husband found out that we might never be able to have kids, there was this feeling of like, this is too hard. Like, it's either like going to have to change or I'm literally just going to die. Not that I wanted to die, but it felt like there was no way that I could carry that burden myself, that there was just no way it was possible. And I think a lot of us feel that when we experience grief, we feel like this is just too much. Like, literally, how could I live like this? But God's mercies have been fresh for me every morning. And I have been able to experience the goodness of the Lord. It hasn't necessarily made, well, yes, it hasn't made that pain go away or that uncertainty and anxiety go away. But I'm also certain of the goodness of the Lord. And I have seen how he has given me new mercy and grace to live my day to day. The second thing that Jeremiah learns or remembers is that waiting is not waste. So this is verses 25 to 27. The Lord is good to those whose hope is in him, to the one who seeks him. It is good to wait quietly for the salvation of the Lord. It is good for a man to bear the yoke while he is young. And this is the second thing I think that's really important. Remember, the first thing was that, you know, where are we hoping? Are we hoping in our circumstances or are we hoping in God and his character? And the second thing is, when we wait, it's really hard. But the reason why it's important, actually, Mark Vrogop, who wrote the book that we are, that we've been basing our sermon series off of, he says this: why is waiting so difficult? Because it feels as if we're not doing anything. And that's the point. You're not doing anything, but God is. Amen. However, waiting is one of the greatest applications of the Christian faith. You're putting your trust in God, placing your hope in him, and expressing confidence that he is in control. Waiting puts us in an uncomfortable place where we're out of control of our lives. And that's the second thing. The second thing is we need to give up control of our lives and be willing to wait. Right? We sometimes want to right the wrongs. We want to see justice happen. And those are good things, to work for justice, especially for others, for those who are oppressed and marginalized. But sometimes we're like, we are filled with this sense of, I need some, vengeance is maybe a word that we wouldn't all admit to thinking, but we want our things to be made right. If somebody said something wrong to us, we want them to know how badly it hurt us. We want them to apologize, right? That's something that we want. But we need to give up control over that. And I just want to share with you a little bit of a story from my own life and what I've been going through recently, where I have experienced that sense of being out of control, but actually how it's been a good thing and how it has even felt like a good thing for me. So, like I just said, you know, Andrew and I have been wanting children. We've been experiencing infertility. And I would say in the past maybe month or two, though, both Andrew and I have been working hard to establish some good routines, to really sort of be in the present, be here and now. And Andrew was saying he felt like there was all these loose ends that he was just starting to like grab and get them pulled together. And I was feeling that same way too. I was like, man, I'm on top of my grading at the school, which is the thing I'm like always behind on. I was feeling like I was establishing these good routines. I was feeling a little bit more in control of my life. And then all of a sudden, this situation landed in our laps where there was a girl that was in need of a home. right? And so we decided to foster this girl, and she has some medical needs that meant that we need to be more present at home, and our whole lives got turned upside down, and all of those loose ends that we thought we were just getting a handle on, it was like, whoop, there they all go again. And then the funny thing is, I read, so we had a good, not good Wednesday, Ash Wednesday service, where we wrote down something that we wanted to give up and something that we wanted to sort of take up instead. And I put something kind of silly down. Normally, I don't like to share this, but I feel like it really applies. I put down that when Andrew asks me to do something around the house, like cleaning and stuff, that I'll do it right away with a good attitude, because sometimes I'm like, ugh, like I was planning to do it later, Andrew. So that was the thing I put down. And then after we decided that we were going to take in this girl, I opened up the paper where I had written what I was going to have instead. And it said, a joyful heart and a willing spirit. And I was like, oh my gosh, like I can't, like I had no idea what I was saying when I said that's what I was willing to pick up, you know? But it also just showed me how God was preparing me, you know, how I was trying to, me and Andrew were trying to kind of get control of our lives and feel like we're in a really good space. But God was preparing us, and he was preparing us for something that we had no idea was going to be coming. And I saw God's plans in his sort of control and his providence in this area that has felt really out of control and really frustrating for me. And so I have this assurance, and I'm seeing God's work and what he's done in my life. And that has been huge for me, just to feel like, wow, God, I can see how you're moving. I can see how you're working in my life. And so being out of control, I mean, there's some out of control that's really not good, but when we have to wait and we have to wait on the Lord for what we want, he's actually working on things that we might not even be aware of. The third thing that Jeremiah remembers is that the final word has not been spoken. Verses 31 and 32, for no one is cast off by the Lord forever. Though he brings grief, he will show compassion. So great is his unfailing love. And this reminds me of the song we were just singing. All the earth will shout your praise. And Anya talking about how the king is going to return. So not only do we have hope in God's daily mercy and the certainty that the Lord is working in our lives, but we have a future hope that in the end, God is going to have the final word. Another quote from Rograp says, at some point in the future, the final word will be spoken. God is going to intervene, and lament is one of the ways we defiantly say, this is not over. In fact, the pain that causes lament can create a longing for the future like nothing else. Christians long for the day when faith shall be sight. Until then, we lament by faith. And I think of it, you know, when I think of this is not over, I kind of think of a, I don't know, a villain or something in like a TV show, and they're like, this isn't over. But it's actually righteous in this sense, right? We're saying this is not over. All of the injustice that we see in the world, that's not the end. Evil is not going to win at the end of the day. And it's hard for us because the end of, like, we have the end of the day all the time, right? We have so many days, so many years, but for God, right, there is like a big end of the day that's coming. Someday, as Anya was saying, every tear will be wiped away and every injustice will be avenged. When we see and lament the injustice we feel and see around us, we turn our hope to this promise. Weeping may stay for the night, but joy comes in the morning. And the last thing that Jeremiah remembers is that God is always good, for he does not willingly bring affliction or grief to anyone. That's verse 33. God doesn't not enjoy when we experience suffering. He's not sadistic. He's not just up there being like, you know, you need a lesson, you know, just ready to pound us. I mean, he wants us to learn, but he's not like waiting and anticipating, excited for when we need to learn, right? He wants us to experience the goodness and the fullness of who he created us to be. And we have to believe that his intentions are kind and that the failures of our circumstances is not the failure of God. So then my question for you is, where does your hope lie? Have you placed your hope in your circumstances, something that you thought was going to be the case, or something you feel like is going to be the case? Have you placed your hope in somebody else? Have you placed your hope in your dreams? Maybe there's things that you think that you want to have, and it's like, but if this doesn't happen, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do. Have you placed your hope in politics and the realization of a better world? I think a lot of people do. They place their hope on this, you know, the society that we can become. Maybe you've placed your hope in your sense of control. All of these things are going to disappoint us, whether we place our hope in them or not, right? We're not going to save ourselves anything by placing our hope in them. In this life, there will always be reasons to grieve, right? We kind of just have to accept that there will always be things that will disappoint us. Vrogop says, to cry is human, to lament is Christian. So when we see these things that are painful, that are wrong, that cause suffering, we don't ignore them. But we also don't place our hope in the fact that the circumstances will get better, because we don't know that. And God doesn't promise that at the end of this day that things will be better. He promises that at the end of the final day things will be better. And he promises that he's going to give us mercy to make it through each day. He promises us that he's not afflicting us with suffering, that he's good to us. And he's promising us that in the midst of the waiting for things to get better, that's not being wasted. He's working in us through that time. So I'd like for us just to take a moment. We are going to take communion here pretty soon, but I'd like for us to take a moment to think about times in the past, or something you're going through right now, or even something that like you're hoping for in the future. What have you been placing your hope in that isn't God? And we have papers. I'd encourage you to take a paper out of the seat and to write this down. And then I encourage you to commit to telling somebody. It could be somebody in your household. It could be a friend. But what's something that you have been placing your hope in that isn't God? And we're just going to take some time of being quiet to really think about that. The piano's just going to play. You're going to think about it, and then we'll be taking communion here in just a few minutes. To take communion now, and we've been taking communion every week now, and you know, it can get kind of routine, but that's a good thing. Actually, it's a good thing to have good routines, times when we are routinely remembering what Christ did for us and remembering how much he loves us and his promises for us. So as we take the bread and the juice, or the wafer and the juice. And if you're at home, you know, feel free to grab something as well. I don't actually want to take it together. I mean, I'll kind of leave it up to you for your own timing. We'll kind of all take it at the same time, but I won't say, like, now eat the bread, now drink the juice. Because I want you to just take a moment and to really connect with God and to accept the promises and to choose to trust the promises that he has given. And if you feel like, man, I'm having a hard time trusting that, take as long as you need to take communion. Take as long as you need to be able to lay those things at the feet of Jesus so that you can put your trust in him. So on your own time, whenever you're ready, you can just take communion. Heavenly Father, we thank you for how you have given so much to us. You've given these promises that you are good, that you're going to have the final word, that our time in waiting is not wasted. God, help us to put our hope in you and not into any of our circumstances. Help us to trust you, God. Help us to trust that you are good, to remember your faithfulness, your steadfast love that never fails. Help us to believe in that so that we can have hope, so that we can dare to hope. We ask these things in your name as we remember Jesus dying on the cross, his sacrifice for us.